G'day. Today we're going to be talking about the politics of Australia. I'm joined by Jono.
Hello.
And I'm Josh. So I'm going to stop that now.
That was actually surprisingly good, I thought. Australians, you can absolutely demolish him in the comments, but I thought that was good.
It's the best I can do. So yeah, the way they do things down under is a bit different to the rest of the world. And I thought it'd be interesting to take a dive into politics of Australia, one to look at how their political system is unique to the rest of the world, and also because they recently had an election a couple of months back and how that's changed, what issues they were talking about, that sort of thing. So before we get into it, let's just have some interesting facts about Australian politics to really get you in the mood to learn about this. So did you know that the Commonwealth of Australia is actually a US corporation?
Wait, what?
Yes, it is. Making it up. It really is. So the Australian Treasury set up an SEC registered entity for issuing securities and is now used as part of the deposit guarantee scheme after the 2008 financial crisis to ensure citizens can receive their funds if the bank they're with collapses.
Wow.
So that's why they did it. But yes, the Commonwealth of Australia is a company. It's still a country. However, it is also a company.
However, so are all of those pandemic policies just protecting their profits or something?
It seems like it. No, this company cannot be traded or publicly owned. All of the shares are owned by the state, as you can probably imagine. So, yes.
But the state is a company. Oh, I don't get it.
I know. It's a bit of a strange thing to do, isn't it? But it's a good fact. So, did you know, and I'm sure you probably do, that it's one of the few countries in the world to making voting compulsory, and they issue fines if you do not vote.
Wow.
So here is a map of compulsory national elections. And as you can see, blue overwhelms to signify no compulsory voting. I think there are minimal sanctions in Australia. And that looks like Egypt. You've got Brazil and a few other countries there.
Peru as well. Peru and Uruguay there, I think. And I'm curious as to why they're a different colour that's not in the key.
What, costly sanctions?
No, then. Oh, no, it's just the way the light's falling on the screen from here. So they actually look like they're orange, not red.
Gone colourblind. But yes, they're in the same ballpark as North Korea there.
No, there's literally a strong glare on Latin America, which changes all of the colours.
But yes, it very much stands out from the rest of the world here, if you look at this. And this is an indicator of just how authoritarian Australian politics can
and
be.
And the only place in Europe that has that, of course, is Belgium.
Yeah. Who would have expected the Belgians, eh?
To be authoritarian. Amazing.
Not only that, I've got some nice videos. I know it's a rarity to have videos on contemplations, but here's some to tickle you a bit. Here is a video of Greg Abbott. I'm not going to spoil what he's up to, but here we go.
Tony Abbott has talked about why he bit into a raw onion last week. Vision of the Prime Minister eating the vegetable, complete with skin, has been shown in Australia and abroad. Speaking to radio station 2SM this morning, Mr Abbott offered this explanation.
I thought it was very important that I should show my support for the great products that the Tasmanian agricultural industry produces.
This was, you know, I enjoy the onions. Then Prime Minister, by the way.
I normally have them cooked on the barbecue, but I enjoy onions.
The industry group Onions Australia is trying to cash in on the publicity. It'll deliver the PM a basket of onions, a list of onion recipes, and a cooked meal featuring onions to promote its campaign to get shoppers to buy local, not imported products.
I like how his explanation was a non sequitur as well. Yeah. Like, why did you eat it with the skin? I like onions. I like onions as well, just not with the skin on.
That's mad.
This next video, this is Craig Emerson, then Labour Minister for Trade. And this is him at the end of an interview. Let's just see what happens.
Well, this is the mood in Whyalla.
This is the middle of an interview, by the way.
Wow.
No Wyala Wipeout there on my TV. No Wyala Wipeout there on my TV. No Wyala Wipeout there on my TV. Shocking me right out of my brain. Shocking me right out of my brain.
Just the way he's got this dead-eyed stare throughout is really creepy.
Yeah.
I think my spine just cringed out through the studio door. But there
you're
we go.
Welcome. I thought I had to torture you a little bit before we get into the weeds of things. Mm-hmm. So before we talk about the nature of the 2020 elections and 2022 even, sorry, too mm-hmm. much US politics, it's worthwhile talking about the political system. So they have a federal parliamentary constitutional monarchy. That is what their system is called.
Okay.
Of course, Queen Elizabeth is the head of the state in much the same capacity as in the UK. Mm. Obviously, she spends less time in Australia. However, the role of head of state in Australia is divided between two people rather than one person in the UK. Mm. And the monarch shares that power with the Governor General.
Right.
And the Governor General's role is appointing ambassadors, ministers, judges, giving royal assent to legislation, obviously also the role of the monarch, and issuing writs for elections and bestowing honours.
So is the Governor General not at all subordinate to the Queen?
I'm not entirely sure of the dynamic between them, but from what I gather, it's largely a ceremonial role in that they're just someone who executes things on behalf of the Prime Minister mm-hmm. a lot of the time. Mm. So yes, they're also the President of the Federal Executive Council and Commander-in-Chief of the Australian Defence Force. However, in practice, they're following the direction of the Prime Minister, as I said, who is, of course, the leader of the largest party in the House of Representatives. Mm. And they have a bicameral legislature like the UK. However, they have names that are derived from the United States. And
mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's not a true separation of powers.
Yes. Mm. So, yes. It's also worth mentioning that in 1901, six of the British colonies united to form the country of Australia with a constitution that defines the relationship between these federal states and the central government. Mm-hmm. And this is why they have the current sort of federal system, which is almost United States-like in its composition, in that the individual states have a lot of ability to legislate on certain things.
As we saw during the pandemic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the state of Victoria in particular enjoyed using its police forces, funnily enough.
Didn't they have like one of the longest lockdowns mm-hmm. in the entire developed world? Or in the world, full stop?
I would say so. And some of the fewest number of cases, even before they started as well. Mm-hmm. And of course, federal elections, as is often the case, are held every 3 years rather than every four or five, like many other countries. Mm-hmm. And this is rationalised by saying that it gives voters greater choice over their elected representatives. However, you could also argue that it brings greater instability as well, in that everyone's constantly changing, constantly lobbying for their next election cycle. Mm-hmm. It's not exactly encouraging the best behaviour, I imagine. Mm-hmm. So, as I alluded to earlier, they have a bicameral legislature, which just means that has a legislature of two parts, but it's also where the executive, the central government, mm-hmm. the Prime Minister's office, that sort of thing, is derived. The same as the UK, where the largest party gets invited to form the government, mm-hmm. Quite often with a majority or in coalition, because, of course, the Liberal Party, who were previously in power, were in coalition with the National Party.
Right.
But they're pretty pally anyway. Mm-hmm. I think it's in the state of Queensland where they have actually joined together, but we'll get onto that later.
Yeah.
So in the lower house, that creates most legislation, much the same as any other legislature, really. Mm-hmm. And the party with the most seats forms the government, as I alluded to earlier. They have 151 members, and they're elected using instant runoff electoral systems, which is a form of ranked preferential voting. So they have sort of proportional representation voting rather than first past the post.
That's very interesting as a test case. And that's presumably why they have more coalitions as well.
Yes. And the upper house, on the other hand, reviews the legislation and assesses whether the laws apply fairly to each of the federal states. So they'll have 6 states that return 12 senators each and 2 of the mainland territories that return 2 senators each. And we'll have a look later on at how this looks.
Okay.
So they also have more power than the UK and Canadian equivalent of the upper house, mm-hmm. as they have the ability to block bills entirely. Mm. And this gives the Senate power to bring down the government if they wish, mm-hmm. as happened in 1975. Mm. So they can just say, well, we're not going to pass any of your legislation,
yep.
and then forces the government to call an election.
Interesting.
Moving on to the 2022 election, citizens voted for all of the seats in the House and half of the Senate.
Okay. So same as America, right?
Yes. And 76 seats are needed to form a majority government. Mm. And the Labour Party, led by Anthony Albanese, defeated the incumbent Prime Minister Scott Morrison, representing the Liberal National Coalition, as I alluded to earlier, to form their first majority government since 2007.
Wow.
And I believe the Labour Party got 77 seats. They're only one seat above a majority. So right. it's not exactly a sure.
But they must have some partners who they could form a coalition with if they had to.
Yes, the Greens, for example, won a few seats.
So in Australia, as in Britain, it seems like a complete progressive monopoly of the political system.
Not necessarily, no? Because there are a fair few centre-right figures in the Senate in particular.
Okay.
And we will get onto that. I'm actually going to talk through all of the Australian parties, what they believe, and how many seats they have, and the sort of balance of power that's going in on Australia, because of course we saw how authoritarian they were during the lockdowns. And this is not really the fault of the central government per se, because mm-hmm. of course it was up to the states how to respond. In fact, Scott Morrison was praised from both sides for his handling of the pandemic. Although I probably wouldn't agree with all of it, you know, could have been a lot worse when compared with many of his fellow countrymen.
Yeah, but I feel like could have been worse is not an appropriate judge of performance when you're in an occupation that also includes people like Stalin and Trotsky.
That's true. I'm just too cynical and jaded with modern politics these days.
To be fair, Scott Morrison, I don't think you can say he was a disaster. I was more surprised by the fact that as a so-called conservative PM, he was a bit of a non-entity throughout the whole process.
Yeah, I think he was he's kind of doing the David Cameron approach of, I'm right wing, but I'm not really, mm-hmm. that sort of thing.
This is the guy who was biting the onion in the opening, right?
That was Tony Abbott.
It was Tony Abbott, sorry.
Yes.
Okay. So no, he's ScoMo's.
Tony Abbott's more towards the right-hand side. He's mm-hmm. sort of one of the ultra-conservatives.
Mm-hmm. He's the guy advising the British government now on
yes.
migration.
Clearly not doing a good enough job because they're not listening to him, but still. There are some very interesting debates about immigration, and there'll be some interesting views that we'll come across later, but I don't want to spoil
okay.
it.
Okay.
So part of the reason why the coalition of the Liberal Party and the National Party suffered an election defeat was because of their handling of the Black Summer bushfires of 2019 and 2020. Mm. These were massive fires. That were very damaging. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure everyone remembers the footage. It was being played on the news. It looked like hell itself had risen up in Australia. And given the wildlife, I could believe it. Mm. So, yes.
And more than usual, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And very much like the UK, there were a series of parliamentary sexual misconduct allegations against the two parties.
Mm-hmm. Throughout the Me Too era?
Something like that, yes. And these have carried on. And there's also, of course, the case of Scott Morrison seemingly lying to Macron and then Macron calling him out on the international stage, just like, yes, you lied to me. This was about the involvement in the AUKUS pact.
Was that really blowback on Australia?
I think it was more Scott Morrison's handling of the situation,
right?
In that he wasn't entirely honest with Macron and he wasn't too happy about it. Mm-hmm. Basically came out and publicly called him a liar, which... it's quite a damaging thing for a person from another leading country to say to someone. I mean, I know Trump got a lot of that from... you know,
right, but for another head of state to say that publicly, I mean, there was a kerfuffle when Obama was in power because he was recorded off the record saying that the Israeli Premier Netanyahu was a liar. And mm-hmm. just being caught off the record saying that was a bit of a scandal in US
yes.
politics. So, yeah, to just come out and say that.
Mm-hmm. And you could also argue that the pandemic did alienate some of the Liberal Party's more liberal members as well from voting for them, as lots of independents actually got voted in. And the coalition actually received the lowest share of seats since 1946. Well, this is pretty significant. And however, both major parties lost out from their 2019 vote share, because lots of third parties and independents actually gained a larger share of the votes, which is actually quite a good thing, in my opinion, because you want to remove power from the main two parties.
It is, but I think we should be wary of using that as a lesson for, say, how the Conservative premiership under Boris Johnson will be received, because, of course, they have a proportional system there, which makes it much easier to gain access to the political stage in Australia as a third party than in Britain.
Absolutely. And I was going to say much the same thing here, because there are lots of parallels between Britain and Australia. Obviously, we're close allies with Australia, and of course, pretty close culturally as well. I mean, it was only 1901 that the British colonies formed Australia, and it started to take form as its own sort of independent entity away from Britain and forming its own culture. Well, I'm sure they're forming their own culture beforehand, but you know what I mean. So, although Labour has a majority in the House, the coalition outnumber them in the Senate as well. So this might prove a problem for them moving forward. So if we move on to this election map, we can see red represents Labour and the blue represents the coalition. So in terms of controlling the various states, it's not looking too good for the coalition, is it?
It looks like they'll end up like Taiwan. They'll just flee to Tasmania with the Air Force.
It's a bit of a red wall there, isn't there?
Yeah.
It's a bit scary. So if we just have a look at which states actually did vote Liberal, moving on to this map of the Australian territories. And this is also a good opportunity to explain what the states are and what the territories are.
Okay.
So you have the Northern Territory that down... up there, sorry, and then down there you have the Australian Capital Territory, who each return two senators rather than the 12, just because they're not very populous. Of course, the capital being its own independent entity is sort of similar to Washington, D.C. Again, you're seeing a little bit of a bleed over from the United States' system here. But yes, the idea here is to respect states' rights, ideally, although I don't know how well that happens, but that is a role of the Senate at the same time. So it's worth mentioning the Australian economy, because it's very unique to pretty much the rest of the world. And this is actually something that I find very interesting, because they seem immune to any form of problem other than the price of lettuce, which I'll get onto later. So yes, it actually, their economy actually grew quite well throughout the pandemic and is projected to grow a further 4.25% this year, which is pretty good, isn't it?
That's amazing. Is that because their economy is like largely primary resources, things like mining and agriculture?
Yes, more or less. And they've also got quite a stable economic system. And I think GDP per capita is one of the highest in the world, and is comparable to many wealthy European countries, actually.
Well, also in terms of population density, like Australia is a large continent.
Yes, however, most of the central part of Australia, you really don't want to live there, ideally. So yes, unemployment rate has fallen to 4%, which is the lowest level since 2008. So there's some sort of confusing figures. While the rest of the world is suffering, Australia seems to be doing quite well.
And even this is in Victoria, I wonder. You'd imagine they'd suffer some particular GDP shock due to the lockdowns.
I didn't look at the sort of localised figures for unemployment, because it'd be a little bit tedious going through each state. But I think that particularly along that sort of southeastern coast is... It's where all the affluence is, and just along that eastern coast, really. So yes, they're still suffering from the rising cost of fuel and electricity, as well as shortages of certain goods. They're much the same as the rest of the world. They're plugged into that global supply chain, like anyone else. So they are still suffering from that. And their economy is also, as you alluded to earlier, heavily dependent on its mining industry, so much so that fluctuations in the price of iron has a significant relationship with the value of the Australian dollar, which is if you're looking at it from an economic perspective, not necessarily a good thing to have your currency tied to a commodity or a raw material, should I say, because you look at a country like Venezuela, where they more or less pinned the value of their currency onto oil. I'm sure they're doing much better now, but when the price of oil basically plummeted, well, that made their situation all the worse when it wasn't already particularly good.
Yep.
And there are lots of cases of having all your eggs into one basket getting catastrophically wrong. However, Australia is this sort of weird case where they just seem to do okay or do pretty well, despite all of these pretty well-established economic rules that work for
Australia
the rest
as
of the world.
Well. If you're to compare it to Venezuela, of course, it has a much larger middle class, a much more well-educated populace and so on. Mm-hmm. And I would expect that the economy itself is more high-tech than somewhere like Venezuela. So it will have
yes. However, just the extent to which it's reliant on mining still is a significant aspect of it. But
that's true. But I'd have to question whether, like, obviously not all mining is created equal. And I do wonder whether there is much more of a technical challenge to what they're doing in Australia than pulling oil out of the ground in Venezuela. But
I think they get quite a few precious metals from Australia as well, that the demand isn't really going to drop.
And also, in times of economic shock, you would imagine people to go into these safer commodities, things like gold and so on.
Yes, but things that you're always going to need. They also produce a lot of coal as well, which is of course going to be useful in an energy crisis. Mm. So they're probably going to fare a little bit better than countries that don't produce anything.
So good news if you're Australian. If there are any people who are involved in like minerals and mining and that sort of thing, like please jump into the comments and, you know, comment on my assertion about the various technical challenges in different types of mining, because I might just be completely wrong. Like maybe it's even far easier to mine for materials and minerals in Australia than to pump oil out of the ground in Venezuela. But do let us know if you have that expertise.
Yes. Just complete irrelevant side note, but I am also a big fan, this makes me sound like a middle-aged dad, but of watching videos of people dig for opals in Australia.
Okay.
It's really interesting because these tiny little opals, they're just digging around in dirt and then they can find one which is like worth, I don't know, 60,000 Australian dollars, which would be the size of their hand. And they're like, right, that's it. Sorted for the year. So there's some proper high stakes there, but never mind. Enough of what I watch in my free time. Yes, they've also got a lot of investment into property, so much more so than many other comparable economies, which could be a potential problem. There were discussions in Australian politics of limiting the number of foreign people who can own property in Australia just because of the pressure on the housing market, because I think it pushes up the cost so much.
In particular, don't they also have a problem with a lot of essentially Chinese billionaires and millionaires trying to offshore their wealth to a more stable economy and turning up places like Australia or London, buying up city properties, not using them, and just driving the housing market,
leaving them vacant? Yes.
Yeah.
That is something that's common in a lot of developed economies, particularly ones as stable as Australia, where it would make a good investment, where it doesn't seem, because of the demand on housing, it seems to be a good investment, more or less. So they also get a lot of money from tourism and education. Tourism, for obvious reasons, in that it's quite often sunny when it's not on fire or flooding.
Yeah, and it's also, like, most of the holiday-taking world is in the Northern Hemisphere, which wants to escape to the Southern Hemisphere when it gets too chilly in the winter. So they have that advantage as well.
And it's worth mentioning that this dependence on tourism is, of course, unstable in much the same way that it is anywhere else, because it's changeable. And there have been also cases where the education sort of economic development hasn't been as stable as it could be, because there have been scandals where they've had, say, Chinese students who can barely speak English getting good marks because they have rich parents. And this sort of thing where it seems that money can buy you good qualifications. It's kind of devaluing the value of university education in Australia, and this is something that's going on quite often elsewhere as well, but it seems to be more so just by the proximity to somewhere like China, mm-hmm. where they're more likely to look into something like that. Mm. And from my experience, lots of Chinese students really couldn't speak very good English from when I came into contact with them. So if they're getting all of these good grades,
yeah.
one's got to doubt. Obviously not true of all of them, but...
No, like one thing I found was that there was a marked difference in the English quality between different universities that I went to. So mm-hmm. Cambridge, which had quite high standards for foreign language, you generally found that any Chinese person you met would speak English and have a conversation with you, apart from some of the postgraduates. Whereas in Imperial, it was very much as you describe.
Mm.
Well, no, that's not fair, but it was more like that.
Sure. It's also worth mentioning that many of the worldwide recessions that have plagued us, like the 2008 financial crash, didn't really affect Australia. So they kind of carried on as normal, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas they seem to be somewhat dependent on the global system, and yet they seem to be unaffected when it goes wrong. So they figured out some sort of magic formula there. They're doing something right, even if it's difficult to pinpoint exactly what, because you can... point to their mistakes that you think, how have you avoided these pitfalls?
Mm-hmm.
And they've just managed to get through. So well done, Australia, I suppose. It's all right for some. Whereas in Britain, I'm going to be paying all of my income in tax for the rest of my life, no doubt.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.